Leland Vittert is here, launching On Balance tonight at 7 o'clock on News Nation. We've heard you on Chicago's Afternoon News with my friend Steve Bertrand. You popped in on our show covering various stories for News Nation. Now you're going to have your own hour. Huh?
That's what they tell me. We'll see if it actually happens 7 p.m. Central tonight.
Yeah. What are you doing tonight?
I think we got to start with COVID. 15 months into the pandemic, to mask or not to mask, that is the question. And it's fascinating because for so long, Americans kind of were willing to sacrifice collectively, right? We're all in this together. People wore masks. People did so mostly willingly. And for a long time, now out in L.A., you had a reopening. People took their masks off. Now they're telling people, even the vaccinated, to mask again. The sheriff there is saying he won't enforce that law. And you're really sort of starting to get into this new debate in America about how much longer are the vaccinated willing to sacrifice for the unvaccinated? How much are people who say, look, if I want to get the vaccine, I can. And if I don't want to, you shouldn't try to enforce it on me. Those are big questions.
You know, it's not scientific, but our news click, our little daily web poll question was interesting. And a guy called in who was a psychologist a moment ago, and he said, I can explain the dichotomy here. But we said, should the kids have to wear a mask when they go back to school? 84% said no. We said, in a subsequent news click, should we follow CDC guidelines? And 94% said yes. But the CDC says your kids should wear masks. So maybe it's how we put the question, but we all agree the scientists are right, but we still don't want to wear the masks anymore.
We all agree that you should follow science, but whether or not the scientists are right or not is a bigger question. Jerome Adams, the former Surgeon General, and I really applauded him for this because he'd been on my show when I anchored in another network back in March of last year. He came on and said the same thing he said on Twitter, which was stop wearing masks. They're not going to protect you. And he said it over and over and over again for a month. And then all of a sudden he changed. Why'd he change? He said, well, because the science changed. And we're not allowing in any of these discussions the space for the question of, well, the science has been wrong before. Remember, COVID wasn't airborne for a long time, we didn't think. We didn't think travel restrictions would work for a long time. And no one today is allowing the idea, well, the science was wrong before. Maybe the science is wrong again. We don't know.
I would put it differently. The science has always been right. The science is what it is. It is our understanding of the science.
Fair
enough. COVID has always had the same characteristics. We are only coming to grips with them. I think that what's lost here is the evolution of learning. This is how scientists and the public learns. So at first we thought, oh God, I got to wash my hands and do the ABCs twice while I do it. Now we've discovered that's not so critical. That's always been true for COVID, but we've only discovered it. Don't you think that we now should understand that it's an airborne illness and that masks have been beneficial?
The science on whether or not masks have been beneficial is still out there, and there's a lot of debate about that. I guess my point is, and it goes to what you said, if we had decided that washing your hands twice and saying the ABCs is what was going to stop COVID, and we had stopped thinking about it then and stopped evolving in our research and learning, well, then we'd still be stuck back in March of last year. In the same way, if we had decided in the 1400s that science was decided and the world was flat, then we would have never explored. And my point is that if you question, for example, do vaccinated people need to wear masks, suddenly you're against science. If you question, maybe women of childbearing age should think twice about getting the vaccine, suddenly you're a tin hat wearing conspiracy theorist. That, to me, is the bigger debate. Not whether or not we should follow the science, but whether we should be allowed to question the science.
Well, I guess people can question anything they want, including 2 plus 2. But Leland, it's unequivocal. Masks have tamped down COVID-19 spread, correct?
It's unequivocal that in places where people wear masks, the spread has slowed.
Sure, I just said that.
Right, but the causation and correlation data, there is a lot of research that the cloth masks are same thing as taking fingernail clippers from grandmothers at airports, is that it makes you feel better, but it may not actually do that much. And the overall effectiveness of it is still very much in question.
Boy, not to me. I mean, N95s are effective.
100%.
Those blue masks that people wear with the white underside, those are effective, even though those aren't N95s. Those are used in hospital settings. Proper masks knock down the air. I can't believe you and I are having this conversation.
I'm not having a question about whether or not it's effective. I'm simply saying that if you think about what the science was back in March of last year, now you think about, you know, and you had scientists saying that was the science. They were 100% sure that masks did not prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah.
Now they're saying they're 100% sure it does. All I'm saying is that it leaves, in when you have scientists having to apologize for being wrong, it should leave open the possibility to discuss what scientists are saying now, whether it's right or wrong.
Dr. Fauci said this weekend that we'd still have polio if we did not believe the scientists, if we did not all participate in vaccine programs.
Absolutely.
I don't know how that lends itself to this, but it seems pretty clear that the vaccines are a good idea. You're talking about masks tonight.
I'm simply talking about leaving open the possibility of questioning the science without being called a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
In the 1400s, if you questioned whether the world was flat, you were a conspiracy theorist. Simply saying, everyone says, trust the vaccine. Vaccine's been out for a year. The long-term effects of it haven't been discussed. It's worth having that discussion with people rather than just saying, no, no, it's safe. If you don't take it, you're a bad person.
So tonight, how are you covering this then?
We're trying to get actually a doctor who's doing just that. There's a woman, an African-American woman down in Georgia and Mississippi and Arkansas, master's in public health, OBGYN, who's trying to go to the highest density of places that don't take the vaccine, which is rural African-American communities in the South.
Yeah.
And trying to, rather than say you must have the vaccine and we'll give you an iPad if you get it, saying what are your concerns and we're going to show you the science and show you why it's safer to be vaccinated than unvaccinated and go through some of these concerns that are out there. The New York Times had a great piece a couple of days ago about a number of healthcare workers, nurses, who you'd think know everything there is to know about the science, who say, it's not been tested enough, and I'm 26 years old, and I might get pregnant, and I'm not going to take it.
There's a program at Northwestern called Clinicians and Clergy, and they take a clinician, a black man here in Chicago, a doctor. He pairs up with a black clergyman. They go to the South Side, and it's a matter of trust, too, science notwithstanding. If your science is good, but I don't trust you, then I'm still not going to be persuaded to take the vaccine. The clergy and clinicians program is very smart, I think, on Northwestern's part. Okay, so you're on for an hour. Well, let's pause here, come back. That's one topic tonight. The full hour, or are you going to do more than that?
We're going to be talking about COVID. We're going to be talking about Cuba. And then we're also going to be talking about a really interesting piece from Mike Allen in Axios, one of America's premier reporters. And this is interesting in the state of Illinois and also for your listeners in Iowa and Wisconsin, that you've got a lot of Democrats from rural parts of America who represent the heartland really worried about how far left the Democratic Party has gone and whether that's going to affect them as rural Democrats in the midterms.
Leland Vittert's in our studio. You watch him on News Nation launching On Balance at 7 o'clock tonight. So you're launching this show tonight. Leland Vittert's in our studio.
I even remember to put my phone on silent.
Mine's been pinging here. I just had to mute it myself. Boy, wouldn't that be embarrassing if your phone started ringing in the middle
of a broadcast?
It's happened
to me. Yeah. It's how you proved everybody that it is indeed live.
Yeah. Okay, we could have edited or muted that out. So is the show then a centerpiece? That is, you are going to drive the conversation, but you're not taking a side, or are you going to have an angle and maybe take both sides, but steer it in a direction?
Well, I think both of those things can be true. And the hallmark, I think, of journalism and what's been missing in journalism in America lately, and this is where I really applaud Perry Sook and Sean Compton for realizing that the center is not simply being in the center of every issue, but it's questioning both sides aggressively and trying to point out the flaws in either side's arguments or the problems either side has. And too much now in cable news, if you watch certain channels, I won't name them, anything Democrats do is great, even if it's completely hypocritical. You watch other channels, everything Republicans do is great, even if it's hypocritical. We're going to be the channel that just calls out the hypocrisy.
But your position, your conversation with me just now on the COVID-19 sounded conservative, if you will.
don't think it sounded conservative. I think it took the opposite side of what you were saying.
Were you doing that because I was saying that?
Yes.
Well, then you're going to tick everybody off. You're not going to have any friends, Leland.
Well, you know, I think it was P.T. Barnum who said, if they spell my name right, it's good publicity.
Yeah. But then, all right, so give me another topic that you're talking about.
We've got Cuba today, which I think is really fascinating. And this may be the place where I will take a side, which is that there is a right and wrong, and what's happening in Cuba and to the Cuban people by the communist regime there is wrong. Shooting your own people in the streets who have been starved and beaten and humiliated for 65 years, that's just wrong. That's fundamentally wrong. Now, what is the debate, and I think this is the important one, is what to do about it. Because there's so many people on the right, especially Marco Rubio, saying we must do something. Francis Suarez, the Republican mayor of Miami, talking about a bombing campaign, U.S. airstrikes in Cuba. Well, we've learned the hard way that the doing something is easy, but finishing it is a lot harder. Those are important questions to ask of those people.
Who are you putting on about that?
Interestingly enough, we've got a Democrat from Miami. She's a Democrat state representative. President Trump won her district. He's, you know, he's very popular with Cuban Americans in Miami. And she's saying that this is Joe Biden's tear down this wall moment. This is similar to what Reagan had the opportunity to do in Berlin, and asking where the members of her party are and calling out the AOCs and the progressive left of the Democrats for not standing up for the Cuban people.
What role does social media play in this Cuba story?
It's enormous. And that's we were talking about this in the break. It's such a great question, because we wouldn't know what was happening in Cuba in those initial protests without seeing it in social media, the same way the Arab Spring began on social media. But history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Go back to 2009, the Iranian Green Revolution began on social media, people in the streets, people getting shot in the streets by the regime, big pressure on the Obama administration to do something, and Iran turned off the internet. When they turned off the internet, the pressure on the Obama administration ended, because the videos were no longer fresh, the news media moved on. Now you're seeing the same thing play out in Cuba. As long as that social media is able to get images out that shock our conscience of children protesting and asking for their freedom and asking for a better life, getting beaten, as long as that continues, the pressure on the Biden administration to do something and on the world to do something will continue.
Yeah. The internet is an amazing thing, isn't it? I mean, it can be very frustrating and it can be a disservice. There's disinformation out there every single day. Anthony Fauci and others, Joe Biden, have said that it's, in some instances, actually setting us back on the COVID battle. But it can still be a great transformer at the same time.
Well, I think you'd agree as a journalist that I will take a little disinformation over no information any day of the week. And I'm old enough to remember when things that were called disinformation suddenly became something that were true or likely to be true or thought to be true. You know, if you talked about the Wuhan lab leak theory back last year, you were a racist and a conspiracy theorist. And now you've got members of the Biden intelligence community saying it's more likely than not that that's what happened. Facebook's had to reverse itself now. So imagine if we didn't have an outlet to ever question those things, then disinformation cannot be simply that information which is either inconvenient or you don't like. And you sort of wonder if that's where these conversations are going.
But in the case of the Wuhan lab theory, I think that context is really key there. It's okay if it started in a laboratory. What I think makes it conspiratorial is, was it being weaponized? We don't know that. In fact, I'm not persuaded at all that that's the case.
Well, we don't know that, but that's kind of the question. The only reason that we don't know that is because the Chinese won't open the labs up. They won't allow international inspectors. They won't allow anyone to look. And really, anytime you take the Chinese word for something, you do so at your peril.
Fair enough, but I think the burden for you is to go down that road, but then be ready to say, yep, it wasn't weaponized. That the reason we don't know that it was weaponized was maybe because the Chinese weren't transparent, but also because it wasn't. Because the Chinese weren't turning it into a weapon. They were doing what we do with other diseases here. They were studying it.
Well, either way, we can agree that it getting out is bad and them lying about it for months was bad.
Yes.
So we got there. We know that that lab did military research. We know they did gain of function research. We know that. That they've even admitted that. We also know, and the Wall Street Journal had a great piece about this, I'll send it to you, that the genetic markers inside the COVID-19 virus, the original strain, were unlike any that had ever been seen in a naturally occurring virus, and ones that were hallmarks of genetically modified viruses. So whether you want to call it being weaponized, or whether you want to call it being studied, or whether you want to call it being looked at, or whatever the words are, the fact of the matter is that 6 miles from the lab that was studying these and how studying how to make these viruses more deadly is where this began.
But that's, boy, this will sound like the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert conversation.
I was about to say that. Hershey,
that's
Pennsylvania.
That's where the bats are. So is it interesting to you, interesting is not the right word, but I was talking to a new producer here the other day, and we have a whiteboard, and we write up the 6 or 7 topics we're going to talk about.
You guys must have a bigger budget than we do over at News Nation, because I said I wanted whiteboards, and it was going to be months, and I had to fill out forms. It is crazy.
So we were at my whiteboard, and I erased it and said, now tomorrow, another term paper. You must feel the same way, right?
Yeah, but that's what you and I love so much, and it's great to have an organization where every other television network is laying people off and cutting, that we're hiring.
I know.
And we're getting smart people in there to have those conversations. It's a privilege. I think our CEO said it was the last great adventure in television, and buckle up.
Yeah, have you heard about this Dan Abrams guy?
I have heard about this Dan Abrams guy. It's funny, he was one of my real heroes as a young broadcaster.
He is not only a consummate broadcaster, he's a consummate entrepreneur.
He is.
This guy, I was reading his bio. He was on with Bob Surratt this morning. Like, he's into wine and whiskeys. He's into algorithms that rate things. He does court cases and TV. He's a pioneer in many senses of the word.
And now he's going to rely on me for his lead-in. I'm not sure what that says, but there you go.
Have a great show tonight. You're always a really tantalizing conversation, and I imagine it's just going to pop on TV.
Well, you know, if it's not past your bedtime, we're going to need to have you on sometime.
No, I've got a face for radio, and I think we'll keep it there. Leland Vittard, however, is very handsome on balance tonight at 7 o'clock on News Nation. Nice to see you, man.
Good to see you.
Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.